Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Thanks for joining me today, Rob.
Hi, Steve. Good to be back.
All right. Good to have you back. President Vladimir Putin's long rule in Russia has been defined to a substantial degree by court cases, trials, and verdicts going back to the early 2000s with the Khodorkovsky case and others. Now, in most countries, the big question in big trials is the verdict. Will the defendant be found guilty or not guilty? In Russia, acquittals are extremely rare, and in politically charged trials, it's usually the sentence that's the main question. Will the defendant get what's called a real prison sentence? And if so, how many years? Or will they get a suspended sentence, meaning that they avoid prison, though in some cases they've already been behind bars in pretrial detention for sometimes long periods of time. Now, verdicts and sentences in two high-profile cases are expected this week, in fact, today. So apologies if we get a little bit behind, though I don't think these had come out just a few minutes ago. In both cases, prosecutors have not asked for the defendants to be sentenced to real prison time. So I don't think there's much room for the unexpected to happen here. One of the cases is that of Michael Calvi, an American investor who's currently under house arrest, and is being tried on what he contends is a baseless charge of embezzlement that stems from a business dispute. And the other case is that of Lyubov Sobol, a lawyer and activist and associate of imprisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Sobol is one of several people, I believe it is nine at the moment, charged with violating pandemic health guidelines in connection with a protest in January over Navalny's arrest upon his return to Russia following his treatment in Germany for a near-fatal nerve agent poisoning that he blames on Putin. Sobol and her supporters say this charge is absurd, as do several opposition activists facing the same charge. The crime carries a potential two-year prison sentence, I believe, in this case. But prosecutors are calling for 2 years of, quote, limited freedom, I believe it's called. These are restrictions in this case that include a curfew and a prohibition on attending demonstrations. Rob, does the fact that prosecutors have not pressed for prison sentences for a prison sentence for Sobol say anything about this case? What do you think?
I wouldn't read too much into that, Steve. As we've discussed in the past, the crackdown going on in Russia now is very broad, and but parts of it are clearly tied to the upcoming Duma elections in September, and Sobol is definitely one of them. So the goal in prosecuting her is clearly to keep her from participating in the elections. She's already out of the elections as a candidate, but she could certainly be a powerful campaigner for other people and that sort of thing. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they just gave her limited freedom. In addition to the restrictions that you mentioned, I would expect to see restrictions on her ability to use social media. Separately from the case, I believe prosecutors have already tried to get Twitter to shut down her personal Twitter account. And I imagine either separately from the case or in conjunction with this case, we'll see that sort of thing going on as well. But as long as she's not able to campaign for other people, because she's a very colorful and charismatic personality, as long as she's not able to participate in the elections, I wouldn't see that they would feel the need to put her in prison, especially if they have the sort of threat of a real prison term hanging over her because of her conditional sentence.
Right. Of course, the suspended or conditional sentence does include the possibility of being imprisoned if you are deemed to violate the terms. Certainly that's not, you know, it's definitely that would be hanging over her head. Now, you mentioned that she's out of the State Duma elections, the September election for the lower house of parliament. She said in June, I believe, that the she announced that she would not pursue her candidacy because of the fact that Navalny's organizations were pronounced extremist by the state, and this would create potential serious risks for people, anyone working on her campaign. So that kind of knocked her out of the running for the elections. And you mentioned the other ways to potentially, or this case, this trial, is a way to potentially keep her out of any kind of role in supporting anyone else, campaigning for anyone else in the election. And many observers, as you say, have linked the current crackdown on the opposition, civil society, and the independent media with the elections, with efforts by the Kremlin essentially to clear the path as much as possible for the ruling United Russia party in the state Duma vote, and also in local elections happening nationwide at the same time. Rob, you worked on a story last week about an increasing number of Russian activists who are being sentenced to compulsory medical treatment, including one city council candidate, I believe, in Murmansk, who was hospitalized for COVID-19 despite having a negative test and no symptoms. In what sounds like a chilling twist, the head doctor at the hospital is her rival in the election campaign there. Tell us a bit about this story, please.
I'm glad you asked about it. It is a fascinating story, although a little bit complicated, so you might have to bear with me. I'll try to be clear. What we're talking about is the case of Violeta Grudina, who was a former Navalny coordinator in Murmansk, and who wants to run for city council in Murmansk, because she has not actually filed her papers yet, as I'll say later in the story. So she's a potential candidate. She came down ill with COVID in early June and tested positive. She was only able to get a doctor to treat her on June 25th. Mm-hmm. Which is the date that of her positive test. When she tested positive, she got an email message through the normal state system, mm-hmm. ordering her to quarantine for 2 weeks. She maintains, I'm not exactly sure on this, but she maintains that the message says that you have to quarantine from 2 days of your exposure. And the state is maintaining, no, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks from the day you get the SMS.
I see.
She emerged from her quarantine on the 5th of July, after 2 weeks after her exposure, after she had tested negative, and after doctors had said that she was finished. But she was immediately arrested and charged, like Sobol, with violating the pandemic regime. She was ordered to undergo COVID treatment in Murmansk, even though she had the negative test, she didn't have any symptoms, and her doctor said that she was fine. Mm-hmm. So she is currently hospitalized and in isolation in a hospital in Murmansk. The head doctor of that hospital, as you mentioned, is running for city council for the seat that she is hoping to run for. He is technically an independent candidate, although he won the United Russia primary, as they call them, up there, and is a longtime United Russia person. Mm-hmm. But as you know, in recent elections, the tactic for many United Russia candidates has been to run as independents just to get away from the bad brand of the party.
Right.
She has been on a hunger strike now. I believe today is her seventh day of a hunger strike because the hospital refuses to transmit her papers to register for the election to her campaign staff, and of course she's being held in isolation, so she can't meet with the campaign staff herself. So she filed the papers, or she gave the papers to the hospital staff on July 25th, I believe, and they haven't shown up at the election commission yet or been returned to her. So she's on a hunger strike with the demand that the papers be submitted or at least hand it over to her campaign, and demand that she be given another COVID test because she is convinced that she's not sick at all.
Right.
She, other than that, though, she's also not cooperating with any medical treatment there because she's afraid that they'll trump up some other disease for which they can keep her in even longer. So that's the situation now, and it is worth following because, as I said, she's in the seventh day of a hunger strike on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we see, I mean, you know, it's hard to be certain about direct, you know, direct relationships, but, you know, definitely see the kind of the elections, you know, as underlying some things here that we're talking about. And it might be, it's probably worth mentioning, and as others have said on this podcast, you know, these cases, in Sobel's case, you know, a trial, and in this woman in Murmansk's case, the hospitalization. You know, these are coming; these accusations of violating COVID-related restrictions come as the state has, you know, many times sponsored or supported, you know, large events that. Where few restrictions have been in place or observed, so you know that's part of the argument of, you know, of those like Sobel who are facing these accusations or charges, you know, that they're kind of trumped up for other reasons.
Yeah, I would agree. It's it must be very disheartening for people in Russia who follow this sort of thing to see this blatant politicization of the pandemic. It sort of reminds me of how when Russia has an international dispute with a country like Turkey or Moldova, Moldova I'll use as an example, you know, the Russian Consumer Protection Agency will suddenly declare that wines from Moldova are full of toxins and can't be drunk by Russians, while wines from the Russia-backed Transnistria region of Moldova are fine and can be. And then sort of you see this politicization of government agencies that are in theory supposed to be protecting Russians, and they're just being used as political tools.
Right. That's an interesting analogy. Absolutely. All right. So we're running out of time. We'll wrap it up there. Rob, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks a lot for having me again.
All right, great to have you. I'll be back next Monday for the next edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please watch for my Week in Russia newsletter this Friday. Thanks for listening.